Hi, this is Tina Turner.
This is Randy Travis.
Merry Christmas from the Swinging Medallions.
This is Martha Reeves of Martha and the Vandellas.
This is Ned from the band Rooney, and you're listening to The Sounds of Christmas
podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Very happy to have soul, R&B, funk singer, songwriter Cliff Beach back with us again this year. Hi, Cliff.
Hi, Ken. Nice to be back.
Cliff is the host of the Deeper Grooves Radio Hour on the SoCal Sound, 88.5 FM. He's also the author of Side Hustle and Flow, 10 Principles to Live and Lead a More Productive Life in Less Time, and Busy Year, 3 releases. I believe that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Last year, you came by and we were talking about that you surprised everybody, including yourself, with a new original Christmas single. The year before was an a cappella single, and before that, your Christmas album, and you've got a new holiday single just out, and I want to dive into as much of that as we can. But first, I want to talk about the other music that you have already released this year, the jazz album, You Showed Me the Way, a different from a lot of what you've done before, inspired by and in tribute to Ella Fitzgerald. Where did that come from?
Well, I studied at Berklee College of Music as a teenager from 16 to 19 and really delved into jazz, being the home of such greats as Quincy Jones and luminaries like Esperanza Spalding and so many people. And so Ella, as I started to learn about music, about singing, about improvisation, just became more and more just someone that I looked up to and admired, really being heavily self-taught, being one of the forays, not only as a vocalist, but as an instrument, really more than just singing. And then just seeing the trajectory of her career as you go through the time periods of being kind of the novelty, just winning Apollo with Chick Webb, singers in the late 30s, in the war years, having her own band after Chick Webb passed away, and then slowly moving up through the ranks with Norman Grant, eventually with Verve Records, doing all the great songbook series that really helped to solidify her in the lexicon of the great American songbook. And so I've always wanted to attempt to do a jazz record as a lover of jazz and a fan, but I was always intimidated because it's art music and it's kind of American classical music, if you will, because it is the juxtaposition of classical music from Europe mixed with African rhythms in the States. And so Ella, wow, I mean, if you're going to pick someone and say, hey, let me do a tribute album, she's probably the hardest vocalist to do, her scatting and improvisation and stuff. But then also, so I wanted people to be able to understand Ella, to understand the Great American Songbook, all the different styles that come with jazz, but still make a Cliff Beach record. And so coming from funk, soul, R&B, blues, I still wanted all those elements in there. And then I think the hardest part of making this record was finding a jazz arranger, because unlike my other records that are very loose and more organic, and we'll get to that when we talk about the new record, Beach Please, this jazz record was probably my most difficult record to date to make. I had to get players who were very well versed in reading charts end to end. So people would say things like, you used a lot of ink, because everything was written out. Although the vocals were written out, although the instruments for each instrument, 9 instruments on the record, were all written, which I had never done, because I usually play by ear and by rote and this kind of osmosis of singing and telling people kind of ideas and they kind of fill it out in the studio and in the practice room, the rehearsals. So yeah, and then working with the jazz arranger. So I found a fellow Berklee alum, Moon, who's from Japan, from Nagoya, but was living in lives in the States. And so he was the assistant to a friend of mine, Julia, who also went to Berkeley. And so just through different events and asking questions, well, we developed a collaboration and a partnership to work on these records. And it was so much fun to have someone who was much younger than me, but really entrenched in jazz, really entrenched in just arranging and writing to that level, and then finding all these players. So my horn players are my normal horn players with one addition, and then we had a whole different rhythm section that could read these charts. But it's been great because it's then pushed me on the trajectory of being a Disney performer with my jazz duo with Greg Smith. And so it's really taken me out of my comfort zone, which I tell people motivationally is where all the true growth happens. But definitely stretch goals, definitely stretched me as a musician. And when I listen back to that, not only from awards and other stuff, but just the magnitude of doing that record, is that I did want to do it. And it's just, it's a beautifully sonically sounding record. I did very well on jazz radio as my first foray into jazz. Was embraced by so many stations and so many blogs. And I'm just so thankful that I was able to do it. And hopefully there'll be more jazz in the future, but I am excited to go back to what I find easier, the funk and soul stuff, as we get into Beach Please. So, but you showed me the way, definitely still out in March and still has legs for many, many years to come, because Great American Songbook, there's songs on there that are over 100 years old and people are still covering them all the time. So I think, like Christmas songs, you know, it's evergreen.
And we played your version of Witchcraft from that album in October when we were playing all Halloween music. Fit right in. That was great. Beautiful. Since this was so different from what you normally do, were you able to perform it in concert at all? Not necessarily the whole album, but even songs from it?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So we never were able to do an album release for the record live, because the arranger Moon, who also played keyboards on the record, was in Japan at the release. So hopefully at the anniversary next year, or some point in the future, we'll actually do it live. But I have, with my jazz duo at Disney, been performing a lot of the Great American Songbook, including a lot of the songs from the record. So that's been very exciting with Greg Smith, who is not only versed in jazz, but versed in R&B and soul. And we put some YouTube clips of different things that are out in that vein as well, so people can see that on my YouTube channel. But it's been fun, because the more I explore the Great American Songbook and rearrange those to fit my style, the more that I'm continually to still learn and promote that record. And I think, you know, going back to my full Christmas record, doing things like My Favorite Things, which is a jazz standard, obviously from the musical Sound of Music, I think that kind of also wet my whistle, so to speak. Also covering Louis Armstrong on that record and other stuff, I think that kind of got me also kind of feeling that I had momentum to be able to tackle the jazz record. So I think every record, you know, making 10 records in 10 years between 2013 and 2022 really put me on the precipice of saying, okay, I think I've done enough and understand enough to try to make that leap. I tell everyone, it's like, when you're going to make a big leap, you want to bring the boat close enough to the dock to be able to make the leap without getting wet. And I feel like the Christmas album was kind of the bridge to make that happen.
From there, you made the leap back to something that is more of what fans of Cliff Beach's music would expect. The album you released last month, Beach Please, an original, mostly original, because there's one cover on there, and I didn't even realize that at first. I was listening to it, I think, last week, that you covered Michael Jackson's The Way You Make Me Feel.
Yeah, that's a special version of that that kind of takes a little bit of the jazz into it, and also his last outing in This Is It in 2009, the documentary. I was like, that's cool. They did it all with vocals. We did it with instruments, but I was like, oh, I like the jazz bluesiness of it. And really, if people break down that song, the 12-bar, extended 12-bar blues, essentially. But yeah, original, these songs, I tell people it's like Dave Matthews Busted Stuff, where they kind of took all these demos and songs they have floating around and made a record. These songs are from a few years ago to 20 years ago, and I needed to find a home for them. And as I started to build the concept of Beach Please and catalog these songs that we have been doing live for a number of years, but never had made studio records, and doing it with my LA musicians, my LA band, who have tried and true and I've been playing forever, who didn't play on the jazz record. So you have to remember that when you work with people, there are no egos, but there's definitely emotions. And I was definitely getting some faces from the bandstand that were basically saying, like, why aren't you using us for the studio album? And so they were excited to finally be on a full length album with us on Beach Please, and so excited to have Color Red Music out of Denver pick up the record to put it out on their label. But as you know, California Soul Music, my own label, put out the jazz record. So it's always nice to be able to spread ourselves, to make new connections, and just build on the fanfare of other stuff. And Denver and this label, Color Red, is owned and run by Eddie Roberts from the New Master Sounds. So people who are familiar with funk soul, New Master Sounds has been around a very long time and very well respected in the space. And we have actually interviewed him on the podcast, which is also pushed out on Duper Grooves. So people can hear that there. But it was exciting to be able to make this record. It was an easier record, I think, in some ways. I mean, definitely a labor of love. It took a lot of editing to get it to what you finally hear. We actually ended up remixing and remastering the record for the Color Red Sounds as a part of the process. But ultimately, I think that's the best way to go, because whatever makes it better and more refined and more accessible and palatable to people, and just, again, stretches you to grow, I was really interested in. And from start to finish, I think it's a great record. I think it just has so much energy and vitality and life. We also recorded it in the studio where I recorded Confident, my biggest single. It has over a million streams on Spotify and won John Lennon's songwriting contest that was done with the group Mestizo Beat out of Topanga. So I had one of their members, Lito Magana, engineer the recording at their studio, because I knew that they would have a vibe, and they're very entrenched in funk soul, being one of California Soul Music's proteges, as well as being on Coal Mine Records and a bunch of other labels since. So it was good to be able to have that homecoming in that sense, working with my band members who I've worked with a long time, working with Mestizo and their recording studio and stuff like that, and then obviously Color Red, who I've loved and admired and for many, many years. So it's been a great capstone. So after making, I think that's our 12th album, I'm looking forward to the new releases coming. And I think I always, every project is a little bit different. I've never done the same thing twice. I tell people Michael Jackson would never make Thriller 2. You know, Bad is different from Thriller, which is different from Off the Wall. You're constantly wanting to be different. You look at someone like Beyonce, you see that she did the Renaissance, which was amazing. And then she did Cowboy Carter, totally different. And so I think, yeah, you're like, how do you look at someone who's done everything? What excites them and gets them up in the morning? And it's like, yeah, they want to win awards and obviously it's won a lot of Grammys and stuff like that. But it's like, they do things that stretch them, that push the boundaries. And so every time I'm able to do that in a little way, then I feel really invigorated. So as we start to talk about new projects coming in the future, they're all different, because I don't want to be pigeonholed to any one thing. Even when I'm doing different types of Christmas stuff, the Christmas album versus all the singles, they're all a little bit nuanced and a little bit different, because I keep a childlike curiosity with everything that I do. I'm always exploring, like, what is something I haven't done? What's something new and interesting that I can do? Or what's something old that I can repurpose in a different way? That's what I'm always thinking about from project to project.
Did you say one of the songs on Beach Please was 20 years old?
Yes, yes. So Reminds Me of You, which we also auditioned on one of the Tiny Desk as a duo this year. But yeah, I originally wrote that song in probably the first year I moved to LA in 2003. My best friend, so it's funny because people think it's like a love song, but it's not. It's really just platonic. My best friend lived in LA for the first year and then moved. And so Reminds Me of You was just like, you know, we used to eat here, we used to do this kind of thing, and I miss you, kind of. I don't even think I ever told her that's what it was about, but yeah, so I wrote it, and it was like very much in this kind of Alicia Keys, James Brown, It's a Man's World vibe. And then we just sat on it a long time. It's like what I call hard drive records. So what happens is that I had this one girl, Autumn Knight, who was doing it live for a while, and then she kind of moved on to a different town in Nashville. She's doing great with her boyfriend Kurt, and she's a Berkeley alum and a longtime friend. And then she, you know, did it live, but we never cut a recording of it. And then it kind of sat for a while. And then Vivica, who's also a Berkeley alum, who's now on tour with Kelly Finnegan from the Monophonics, we floated the idea to her, and then she loved it, but then nothing ever happened. And a few other people I kind of showed it to. I really felt like, oh, wow, a female singer would probably do this more justice than me. And I was like, oh, that's kind of softer. And it's not fully soft, but it's like a ballad, and I don't really do a lot of ballads. So I was like, okay, it'll just kind of be whatever. And then finally, I got to the point where I was like, I'm just reclaiming songs that I've written for other people for different projects, because my babies need to be born and then get out there. And if they just sit forever, I don't want to die with that music inside me. And if people don't want to take it, then I'll do it. And so I think it just took me 20 years to have the confidence to say, no, I can do that. And it doesn't need a female. A male can do this and be sentimental and still have grit and still be me. And so, yeah, we put it out. And I think it's one of the better songs on the record because it's so different from what I normally do. Also, it's written in like a 6/8 or 12/8. And I don't do that often either. And that's very vintage and old school. But I love the sound of songs that have that. And yeah, so I'm just glad that like this idea that I always thought was great, it's finally coming to full fruition where people can actually draw down and stream it and listen to it. And so, yeah, 20 years later, still good. That's the beauty of a song, is that if it's good 20 years ago, it's good 20 years from now. They may change production styles and stuff like that, but the melody and lyrics, and that's what I always focus on. It's like, if it's memorable, if I can hum it, if I can sing it a cappella, then that's good. And if it's not that, then it's the other kind of music that I don't do.
You know, it's interesting when there's a new Cliff Beach album or EP or something on the way, you sort of established a pattern in that there's no pattern, that it's, as you had said, it's different from what came before. And there's an element of excitement to that. But by the same token, I listened to the Jazz album and I just feel like I want more of that. When's he going to do another one? And I'm sure maybe there will be another one, but probably not anytime soon.
Yeah, definitely not next year. But there have been some talks of ideas of another Jazz record too. In the next couple of years, most likely it'll be possible. I do have a Jazz duet. Not sure if I can actually drop it out, but in the next couple of weeks, there should be a Jazz duet with an older Jazz cat that's coming out. And we're going to be revisiting a Burt Bacharach classic, who I am a huge fan of his writing. And so I think that will definitely give some people at least a stopgap bridge as they're waiting for more Jazz stuff. And then I do want to do, with our Jazz duo, eventually record something with Greg Smith. So there'll be a few things floating around, but and I am still talking with the arranger Moon about possibly doing something, if not that, somebody else. For another idea of a Jazz record I want to do around Herbie Hancock and around Herbie Hancock as a vocalist, which I think will be interesting. So we'll have to talk about that in length at a different time. But he's not known as much for his vocals, but he did use vocoder and some other stuff. So I was like, that'd be cool. It's very Japanese influenced, and he had a lot of music from that time that he did in the late 70s. And so I'm trying to possibly work with a Japanese element to be able to do that too, not just the arranger Moon, who I mentioned previously, but maybe a Japanese label or something. So we're floating some ideas around, but I'm excited because, wow, if I can make that record happen, it's going to be legendary, because it's almost obscure. It's like you can find imports of certain things that I'm thinking of, but like nothing well known. So it's like almost like people will think it's new because it's so, I mean, they'll know, they recognize the songs, but they've mostly heard instrumental versions. There's a handful that have vocals, but I think it's cool. Herbie Hancock's one of my hugest influences as a pianist. I also took his master class a few years ago, and I'm still like pulling down information from just the being of music, that he really has a philosophy of like, if you're being music, then the doing is easy. And so I think that's what I learned the most, is that Ella and people like that were so effortless in what they did, because they were just They were music. They weren't trying to be music. And that's what I'm trying to get to.
You know, Herbie Hancock has such a rich legacy of amazing music. And sadly, because of MTV, when you mention his name now, most people think of Rocket.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Rocket was a push in the right direction for MTV, for sure, who wasn't at the beginning playing a lot of Black artists. So Rocket was probably the third, I think, after Michael Jackson and Prince. And so, but yeah, I mean, Herbie, to be from a whole different genre, that was very pioneering. But I always loved his trajectory. You know, you look at Ella, and it's like she had so many different periods of, like, how she was singing and how she evolved. In the same way Herbie Hancock had that too. I mean, he came from the Miles Davis and then his solo records, you know, with Watermelon Man, and then eventually moving to the funk period with the Headhunters and then into electric and then beyond. So I think that's, again, artists that are like, what have I not done? What have I not tackled? What's the next windmill to fight? That's the ones that I look up to the most because, you know, like Stevie Wonder, man, he had so many prolific periods of every album being amazing back to back to back. Prince, same thing. And so I think, yeah, that's what I aspire to. Herbie Hancock was, you know, even jazz purists would be like, hey, this isn't jazz, this isn't that. He didn't care. He was just like, it's good music. And he, you know, wow, let's use synthesizers in a new way. You know, I just stumbled upon with him. So before, and I don't remember the name, but before Headhunter's record, there was an album before that. And it only had three songs on it. It's very avant-garde and very synth. And at the time, people were like, didn't know what to do with that record. So it was pretty much panned. But then the Headhunter's album became a million seller. So it's like, I think he was a little bit ahead of his time. In the same way you look at a Miles Davis, in the late 50s, did Kind of Blue. And then in the late 60s, did Bitches Brew. Now, Bitches Brew was because he had dated Betty Davis, who was a huge funk pioneer. And she had changed her wardrobe and got him into like a much younger vibe and with younger musicians and stuff like that. So there's always this trajectory of how their evolution. I mean, you look at Quincy Jones, who just passed away. It was like, if you look at his time periods of being a trumpet player in different bands, then moving into production in the 60s and arranging for like a Frank Sinatra, and then moving into the 70s, getting funkier, the 80s with Michael Jackson, and then beyond, it was just like, you know, and then he moved into producing TV and green lighting, you know, Color Purple and Fresh Prince. And, you know, so it's like all these people, they just want to do things that are good and things that are exciting and things that are interesting. And the older they get, they still get better and better because they're always like, let me try something else. Let me try something else. They're not fearless, but they feel the fear. They do it anyway. And they get out there and they're like, I'll do that. It's like when I saw Herbie Hancock the last time, he did the 50th anniversary of the Headhunters. And obviously one of the Headhunters has passed away. So Marcus Miller filled in for him. But they hadn't played that record as a group in 50 years at the Hollywood Bowl. And then he brought in all these young kids in the second set because he was like, they keep me young. You know, I always tell people, if you stay useful, then you'll stay youthful. And that's why I like to get up there and do that. And I mentor younger people because they push me to not get old and stagnant.
Didn't you just, weren't you just named as a mentor for the Grammys?
Yes, I was.
Grammy U?
Yeah, for Grammy U, which is their Grammy University for up-and-coming artists. They're just pretty much graduating out of school. So I matched with a girl local to Los Angeles. We just met up for the first time at a show last week. And she was super stoked about having a mentor. And we'll have multiple sessions of just meeting up, talking about music, talking about what I've done and things that she wants to do, sharing music between us. She's into some cumbia. So we talked about that and shared some stuff. But yeah, it's great. I've been doing so much mentoring in the last year with Big Brother Program, with Tony Robbins Foundation, with Saddleback in LA for their middle school students. And so, yeah, anytime I'm able to give back, plant those seeds, I really do enjoy it because they make me think and it reaffirms a lot of things for me. But I just remember how difficult it was not only finding mentors, but just getting help along the way. Even now, getting help can be difficult. So whenever a door opens for me and people are like, hey, I need a contact for something, I need to know how this is done. How do you find a label? How do you find a PR agent? How do you find a radio team? How do you find social media? How do you find whatever? I was like, yeah, this is what I've done. This is what worked for me. That's what the books have been about. You know, Side Hustle and Flow was all about, you know, how do I put a plan together? How do I make goals? Now the new book coming out in January was like, how did you lose weight? People were asking me about that, seeing my weight loss journey in the last year and reversing type 2 diabetes and stuff like that. So yeah, anytime I'm able to mentor, I'm able to give back, it gives me such an energy, but also just the appreciativeness that I get from the people and the love, especially from younger people. I think the beauty of working with younger people, they teach me a lot of patience, but also they're young where they have the level of optimism that I had before I became a little bit jaded. I think the industry can beat you up a lot and life can beat you up and you go through a lot of things. And I live in many ways a faster, accelerated life. And I put myself out there a lot. So I get a lot more rejection than just the average person. And so you are a human being, you are feeling and empathetic and things are coming at you. And the complexity of doing music full time and working full time is another layer on top of that. So just even having the time to give back and volunteer is amazing. But, you know, I just try to approach it with like, since I don't have kids, like, well, what would I want to impart? I want to leave a lot of music as a legacy, but I also want to leave a lot of ideas of just like ways to do it. Because I'm constantly thinking about like, who do I need to know and how can I get to the next level and what do I need to do? And the Grammys is a great way to do that. It gets me more ingratiated into the community, into the academy, getting more known from people. So I'm always putting out for consideration all the records that we do, recommending people to get into the academy. So whatever handheld holding or leg lifts or whatever I can do to help people get to where they're trying to go faster, then I'm happy to do that. It's good karma. It makes me feel really good just in general. And like I said, I really enjoy when I do get to see the appreciation. People are excited to talk to me, then I'm excited to talk to them. And there's a lot of love being poured out in both directions and light. So yeah, I'm super excited. My first time doing the Grammy U. My first time doing, being matched with a mentee in this forum. And I think it's going to be a great relationship. I mean, so far we've had great interactions and, you know, some really good vibes and energy out there. And seeing someone, because anytime I've mentored, I've coached people who have now gone on to make their own records and have millions of streams on their own. And whenever that happens, it really is great to see, like, you know, when they're 18 and now they're 30, it's really great to see the trajectory. Like, wow, I really poured a lot into that person and where they went. You know, they went places that I couldn't even go and did sold out shows and a bunch of stuff. That was cool. And it's like, I just had a piece of that and a part of that. And so with one student, I was able to celebrate their live show at the Wheelturn and come on stage and give them a hug and dance and their crew and all that stuff. It was fun. It was just, wow, that's what life's all about, to really have these wow moments of like, I help, you know, like shake and bake. I help. You know, I didn't do the whole thing, but I help.
I have more questions I want to ask you about that, but I can almost hear people going, this is all great, but what about the Christmas music? So let's shift gears and talk about that. The new single is out, O Come All Ye Faithful. And once again, it's different. It's a gospel take. Did you have any of your band from Beach Please on this with you?
No. So this is one of those few moments where it's all me. So I'm playing piano and doing all the vocal layers, and it's very simple. After doing the previous single for Christmas Day Funk and then the acapella, I was like, I don't want to do an acapella again, even though I was thinking about that at the time, but I wanted something that had a lot of layers. And then I wanted to do something that was really well known from the public domain, because I had done that with Jingle Bells. And then I didn't want to write something new because I just really didn't have the energy with so much PR for the album this year to think about writing something. Not that I couldn't have done it, but I just was like, oh, I'd rather do something that's kind of well known and And then I had been doing through church and other stuff, different kinds of music. And I was like, wow, it'd be great to tackle that. I think also last year on the podcast, we talked about it. And I said, well, if I did do something, I'd want to do something that was Christian gospel. And Christmas, it's so well known, the traditional stuff. You know, Ella, speaking of Ella, she did a whole secular Christmas album and then later a traditional album. So in that vein, following her footsteps. But yeah, I just wanted something that was very angelic, very ethereal, very simple, because I feel like sometimes I do a lot of things that are rhythmically involved. But I did want to reharmonize it because I love Robert Glasper and stuff like that. I wanted to make it modernized because I don't like something that sounds stuffy or old or like I'm pipe organ in a church. I didn't want that. But I think there's some great groups in the gospel vein, especially now. Harlem Gospel Travelers are nominated for a Grammy this year, their first. Cole Mai and Corey Hamry with his church album. I think there's a lot of people that are doing cool stuff within that space, but it's a homecoming for me, back to my roots. I grew up on Christian music, all Christian music essentially, through childhood. And I kind of dedicated it to a friend of mine who passed away. His name was Casey, and he was like one of my musical mentors in high school. And he passed when I was in high school. He was probably about 10 years older than me in a car crash. And if you listen to the ending of O Come All You Faithful, there's a tag in there that is reminiscent of the tag he kind of taught me and as a teenager. And so seeing his kids that are now grown, now it's great, you know, to have that connection. His family, his parents, his siblings, they were all like my extended family. And I remember just saying, hey, you're doing what I want to do and teach me. And he's like, sure. And he took so much time with me. And I think that's part of how I give back, you know, because I had a lot of people who did that over my lifetime that I forget until I spontaneously remember, like, oh, yeah, that person gave hours and hours of their time for free to help me. And so that was cool. But yeah, O Come All You Faithful, it's like, if it gets people into a place of just like a very relaxed, by the fire, just no muss, no fuss, it's a very chill Christmas, then I think it's done its job. And it's not intrusive. It's very good in the background. But, you know, people get a little bit misty, a few people, when they're listening to it, I've heard, and that's cool. I think it's good to have something, you know, because funk and the stuff that I do, it's like very in your face, very tongue in cheek, and that kind of thing. And so this is like more stripped down and more relatable and more me on the softer side. And it brings me full circle, because when I was starting out in music, most of my stuff was piano vocal. Most of my stuff was ballads. So I think I kind of got away from that, because ballads are tricky because you can't hide as much, and so it forces you to kind of stay in that lane, and there's nowhere to duck under. But we had so much fun. I will say, this is probably some of the highest background vocals I've done, so I don't know if I was trying to reach God with vocal notes, but it lingers almost on the castrati to some people.
Did recording this make you think about at least doing some more gospel kind of music, whether a gospel Christmas album or a gospel non-Christmas album?
Yeah, I mean, just seeing what's happening around Roots Gospel for the Grammys and other stuff, I am thinking about doing a Roots Gospel album in the future, chatting with my East Coast band, who's very entrenched in the church, because I think with homecoming, going back to Maryland, as I did for the Gospel Cornish with Beach album, was a lot of fun. And so I think that'd be cool. So we're floating some ideas around. Hopefully we'll be able to pull something together. I don't think I would play on it. I love gospel pianists in terms of their organ and clavinet and Rhodes and stuff. And so I think there's some great players in the trio who have already done stuff like on my Son of a Beach album and a couple of other records. So it'd be cool if I'm able to get them. I'm talking to my friend Sean, who's an amazing bass player in Baltimore, to see what we can do. But yeah, I'd love to do it. I think it'd be great, because The gospel according to Cliff Beach was gospel influenced funk, but this will be very gospel and very traditional. And again, still doing some of the reharmonization, which I love, making it more modernized. And I think a lot of people haven't heard some of these songs, and I grew up on them. I grew up on like the Baptist red hymnals, but it was very dry. So I'm trying to figure out like how it could not be dry, because I've seen it done both ways, and I've seen it done where it was like, wow, this is so fresh. And and I've been on gospel playlists on Spotify over the years too. So I think it'd be exciting to do it. It's nice because you don't have the lift of writing the songs. I think sometimes when I did, you know, the jazz album or other stuff, there's so many things that were written so well and so iconic. I don't even know if you could say as an artist you could write new stuff to that level. You hope, but who knows? But because the songs are so old and so timeless, there's no shortage of redoing them. And actually, to be honest, I don't really hear a lot of traditional gospel done as much. I mean, there's a handful of groups like Blind Boys of Alabama, who I've interviewed on the podcast, that are doing it. But a lot of people who know those songs are kind of dying off as boomers and beyond. So it's nice to be able to keep that going forward with a new generation. I'm kind of like a midpoint, I guess, now to the next generation coming up. And hopefully, you know, 20, 30 years from now, someone hears my record and says, oh yeah, let's redo these all over again in a whole flipped way. You know, based on what I did, flipping from multiple generations before. But I love old traditional gospel. I love Mahalia Jackson. I love Sister Rosetta Tharpe. I love the Little Richard stuff when he crossed over to gospel. I did a whole Al Green gospel set on the radio for Deeper Grooves, which I thought was amazing because a lot of people don't know his songs. And I actually knew Al Green's gospel stuff as a kid before I knew his soul stuff in the 70s as an adult. So I think a lot of great artists, you look at Aretha Franklin, her best album was Amazing Grace. I think a lot of artists came from that medium and then branched out. And I think there's still so many layers to that. I was telling people, like, if you love Al Green and you don't know gospel, like, you're doing yourself a disservice. So I think there's still room to put that out there. I mean, I see now Al Green just recovered, was it R.E.M., I think?
Really?
Everybody Hurts? Yeah. So there's always somebody covering somebody, but you know he's going to give it that soulful gospel treatment.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
You know, one of the things I love about gospel, and one of the things I think a lot of people don't realize, is that there is such a wide variety of what you can get, because there are songs like your version of O Come All You Faithful that are very, I think the word you used was chill. And then there are, I don't know if Aretha did it first or if Whitney did it first, but they did a version of Joy. They both did the same arrangement of Joy to the World in the early 90s and with a full choir. And it was just raise the roof, barn burner kind of song. And it was just amazing. And you get everything from one end to the other. Gospel means so much and is so huge. You could do a gospel album, or, as I admit, I would hope, a gospel Christmas album, and it would be every track would be so much different than the one before it.
Definitely, yeah. And I think there's a lot of traditional gospel music and gospel Christmas music. And you're right. You look at Aretha's Joy to the World and Whitney Houston, and you realize, wow, they both had those roots in the church that poured out into their music. I think gospel, the way that I like to think of it, is that all music is a transference of feeling. All music has soul. But what gospel does is that it really has a fervor of belief. And I say this meaning it could be believed good or bad, you know, depending on the person. But essentially, they really believe it. You know, that I think that the earnest belief pushes you over, I think, the edge when you hear some stuff like that. Even when you listen to like old blues music, like a Fun House and stuff, it's like they knew their handful of chords, but they really had to get their emotion out there. And so I think gospel allows you to get emotion out there with this audacity of hope behind it. I think the light and the hope that you hear in it makes it joyful. And I think, you know, there's other styles of music that aren't joyful. There are more sad songs and different things. And gospel is more, even in ballads, still hope. And I think this, we need more hope in the world for sure. So yeah. If O Come All You Faithful gives you hope, because ultimately the Christmas story from a Christian perspective is a story of hope. It's a story of waiting for a promise to come that tomorrow will be better than yesterday. And so I think if that energy is what I'm putting out in this single and people get a piece of that, then I've done my job.
Yeah, that's terrific. Before we wrap things up, I want to talk about 2025. That's just around the corner. I know you got a lot of stuff in the works, starting with the new book that you already mentioned. You have a live album coming out in January. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. So anyone who knows me knows I'm always just many moves ahead. I like to plan in advance because I know how long things take to get done. And so I just plant a lot of seeds, knowing they're all going to spring up at different times. But yeah, 2025 is fairly committed with multiple projects. In January, we will be playing NAMM again. This is our third official slot. Our second at the ADJ Arena stage. Last year, we were on the Yamaha main stage. And so to celebrate that main stage appearance, which was a big coup for us, we're releasing. Already on YouTube, we have that, but we remastered all of that content to be able to push that out as a live record. We've done, technically, this will be the third live at NAMM because we did live in 2019 with Dyne Audio, which is out streaming. And then we also did live in 2020 with Jam in the Van. And now we'll have the live from 2024. So excited to have that. Two songs from Beach Please are on there at the end. So it's nice to be able to see what was to come. And that was on the precipice of the jazz record coming out earlier this year. So excited about that. Also, we'll be having the second audio book installment of Side Hustle and Flow, Shape Up, which is talking about my weight loss journey. In a year, I lost 50 pounds, but at my biggest, I lost about 75. So reversing type 2 diabetes, really understanding about my sobriety. I'm 5 years sober now, but also I just tell people basically the tagline is, if you like Side Hustle and Flow, Side Hustle and Flow helps you put a plan together. But the beauty of Shape Up is that it refines that. You're able to hustle harder, healthier. And that's the part I didn't know. So if you hustle harder, healthier, you get your health in check, health as well, then it makes applying the first book so much exponentially easier because then you'll have the energy and the stamina to actually do it. You can do it without getting your health together, but it just is a slower process. So I think if people want to be, you know, working on themselves, January, new year, new you, resolutions, it's giving you practical tools that allow you to do something as a lifestyle change. It's not a diet. It's a lifestyle thing. It's like I have been on a streak, almost 500 days of tracking everything I eat. I have not missed a day. And I love to look at my fitness pal and see that because I'm like, wow, I really kept that streak up and I didn't miss a day. And that's good because those baby steps, daily things, that's how you move the needle. You have to boil that frog real slow because otherwise people, they overwhelm themselves and that's why resolutions are done so early in the year because you really bit off too much you could chew. Just a little bit. You know, stop eating fast food as a thing. Lower your drinking or stop drinking. It's dry January. You know, walk every day, 30 minutes. If you can't do 30 minutes, do 15. If you can't do 15, do 10. Meditate for 5 minutes a day. Journal for 5 minutes a day. Whatever you can underwhelm yourself and do. Because once you start doing it, the thing is people don't realize is whatever project you're working on, there's inertia. Not doing stuff for a long period of time makes it harder to actually do it. But if you figure out what that next little step is, like if going for a walk is just putting your shoes on, you wake up, you hear the alarm, you turn it off, put the shoes on, you go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That's what Mel Robbins says. 5 seconds. In 5 seconds, you have either decided to do it or you go back to bed. So it's like, don't hit snooze, go. Right? Because the person who is diligent about that is just moving and eclipsing you. And it's not because you couldn't do that too. It's just, you know, you have set yourself up to be unsuccessful because you have not put a plan together in action. So I'm excited about the book. I mean, I feel way better just as a human being. Like I didn't realize how heavy I was, until I was weightless. It's like now I don't feel like I have this gravity always on me. And so I can get way more done than I could, 2, 3 years ago. But I think they're all incremental steps. Becoming sober helped me then tackle better goals, which then helped me then tackle health. So it's like I did not take them on all at once. And I think if I did, I would not have been successful. So it's never too late to start, and anytime's a good time. And if you want to start earlier, you can start pre-ordering it in December. So it'll be the gift you give yourself for January. But anytime is a good time. And then from there, after January, we'll have a few other projects in terms of music or the contemporary EP that'll come out in March. And hopefully in October, something with the string quartet, Constellation Quartet, which I have done many shows with and was finally able to get them into the studio. It's been 3, 4 years in the making of making that record. But it's exciting because, wow, I call it popsicle, pop classical, but soulful classical music, it's like a genre. I don't even think it exists. I mean, it's so few albums to even compare it to, but I'm excited because I love doing different things. And I loved working with them. Their arranger and their leader and just how it all came together is very organic, and they're great players. Just like I had on the jazz record, but totally different. So every project is stretching me, pushing me, and I know every year I say, maybe next year I'll take a break, and it never happens.
Any chance more Christmas music next year? I know it's an awful question to ask right after you release a Christmas single, but.
It's always a chance. And I want to do this Ruth Gospel record, so I hope that happens. And if for some reason it does or doesn't happen, I think there definitely are other traditional gospel Christmas songs I'd like to do. So I think at most there might be another single for that. Could be an acapella. I mean, I love acapella, so I could do that again. Could be funky, could be gospel, but I think there's definitely covers of other songs. I would love to cover one of the stacked Christmas songs. So like I'll Be Your Santa by Rufus Thomas, or Backdoor Santa by Clarence Thomas, or something like that could be cool. But you never know. It's like I just kind of take life as it comes, and I keep it in the forefront of my mind. Maybe it could be a collaboration too. A duet would be cool. I know that the jazz duet's coming out. I have technically also been thinking about writing a new jazz kind of Christmas song with Greg Smith, who I've been doing the duo with, because I think Christmas and jazz go hand in hand. So I haven't decided yet, but I have some thoughts, and I know we always talk throughout the year, and so we'll see what is to come. But yeah, there's a good possibility that something will happen. I always say maybe not this year, and then I end up doing something at the last minute, so possible.
Yeah, I know last year Christmas Day Funk came was a surprise. You weren't planning it.
Yeah, it definitely was, but I just, the holidays can be happy for some, not happy for others. You never know that because, some people have family members or loved ones that passed away or different things. And it's two sides to that coin. So Christmas Day Funk is tongue in cheek, but I wanted to write something that was like, what do people do when they're kind of blue on Christmas and they're just like tired of seeing all these cheesy, happy movies and happy songs and you're like not really feeling that, but also like there's funk in terms of the style of music, but also like that feeling of trying to get out of a funk. And so that's what that song was kind of about. It birthed of like, man, I want to get out of this funk with funk music for Christmas. And I was like, has anyone ever done it? And to my knowledge, no. So that's what that song became. I was like, we'll do it then.
Before I let you go, what's the best way for people to keep up with you? Is it social media?
Social media would be the best. I'm pretty sure every handle is at Cliff Beach Music. So you can DM me there. People can also email me. I get a lot of emails at the station. So cliff@885fm.org. Link to all my emails and they can get me there. Or cliff@sidehustleandflow.net, either one for the book. But DMing me is the fastest way because I'll see it and get back to you. But yeah, I'd love to hear from people. I'd love to hear when people are losing weight or doing projects or mentoring other people, like personal stories, human interest stories, I'm always interested in because I am interested in people. And obviously, if they hear something in the song that resonates with them, I love to hear that. So any way they want to get at me, I'm happy to respond.
Terrific. Cliff, thanks so much for spending time with us today and talking about all of this.
Thank you, Ken. And thank you for letting me diverge onto non-Christmas projects as well as talking about the new single. And I'm hoping that people, as they enjoy you throughout the year and definitely this holiday season, listen to tons and tons and tons of Christmas music. Hopefully people are inspired to make more Christmas music of their own. And then we'll be hearing it together.
And thank you so much for listening, helping us share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page that lists most, if not all, of the streaming sites that carry the Sounds of Christmas podcast. So you can click on that, find your favorite, scroll down, and click on over, and subscribe, and then you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. And if you're listening to this on your phone, you can also click the Send Us a Text Message link and connect that way. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.